Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, while my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, takes some time off from the show, we're bringing in some wonderful guest hosts who, like Matt, are making a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, today, I'm operating solo, but please check out some of our past shows to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as some dynamic co-hosts. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassador listeners who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media groups and to someone you know who can benefit from a particular show. Now, I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, our topic today is one that I'm very excited to learn more about, which is strategic thinking. Now, as a lifelong detective, it is something that I hope that I have learned quite a bit about, but can always learn more. Our guest, Dr. Julia Sloan, is a leading authority on the cognitive aspect of strategic thinking and is widely recognized for her pioneering work on the application of complex cognitive theory to everyday strategic thinking practice in global business and public policy. Now, her strategic thinking work draws upon over two decades of her own corporate experience, and she's worked in Asia, Africa, Middle East, Europe, and North America, working on strategies to align the business agenda while dealing with prevailing economic, cultural, and social issues. She is the author of the definitive book, Learning to Think Strategically, and has also written numerous privately commissioned articles and white papers on the topic of strategic thinking. Now, Julia teaches strategic thinking at Columbia University and has lectured at some of the premier academic institutions. She has been awarded a researcher and residence fellowship for 2017 for the study of the cognitive and conceptual role of metaphor on the development of strategic thinking. She has also been the recipient of the Faculty Excellence Award, the Ahead of the Curve Teaching Award, Outstanding Teaching Award, and the Innovative Influencer Award. She has served on several college and nonprofit advisory boards as well. Julia's educational background includes a doctorate from Columbia University, master's studies at Yale University and the University of Alaska, and undergraduate studies from Kent State University. Julia, welcome to Answers for the Family. Julia, are you with us?
Yes, Alan, hi. Yes, unfortunately, the sound keeps fading in and out, so I'll do my best here to grasp these questions as they come.
Well, thank you so much for being with you, and I apologize for any
my pleasure.
Any of the technology issues that we might be having today. Now,
okay.
I've got to tell you, being somebody, as I said earlier, as an investigator, we really do a lot from the standpoint of trying to think strategically, but we do it sort of on an individual basis. You take a particular case and you have to strategically set that up. Now, what I love about your book and with what you're doing is how we take this and we take it on a much global scale, where we're looking at global economics or cultural or social issues. So, What inspired you to write a book about this and put it out there for more people to be able to understand?
Well, I love your own example of being an investigator. I think this, within a strategic context, I think this is something that's often lacking in terms of developing a strategic mindset, is this investigative mindset. And the impetus for this book really did come from my own experience in working with global strategy, where I became very, very aware of the disconnect between strategic planning and strategic implementation and strategic thinking. And there's a lot of research that's suggesting that anywhere between 75 and 95% of strategic plans never make it to implementation. And when you think about the amount of resources that we put into so-called strategy season, that's just an incredibly poor return. And so I was really interested in this gap of, if we're putting so many resources into so-called strategy meetings, why is it that so few of these so-called strategies never get implemented? So I really was interested in how successful strategists in any sphere, whether it's business or government or the military, how these people really do learn to think strategically. And it is just, it's just been fascinating.
Now, why do you think we have this surging demand and yet a shrinking supply of strategic thinkers?
I think a lot of it is because the term has become very trendy. People love to use the term, well, now they love to use the term strategic thinking instead of strategic planning, which people associate with being boring. But I think the problem is that people don't differentiate between what is strategic thinking and what is strategic planning. So the term itself has become very overused and misused and underdefined.
Yeah, what I'm getting out of that is that, you know, taking myself, I think about a lot of things. I think about a lot of things that I think could help society or that could help our country or could help my kids. Doesn't necessarily mean that I plan to do all of them. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes. And also, I think, you know, when you break down and look at some of the elements of being a good strategic thinker, one of those is an ability to have a good imagination, divergent thinking. And this, I think, is something that we're often not taught. It's often not emphasized. It's seen as something that's being irrelevant. Another element of being a good strategic thinker is having a broad perspective. Like you said, we think about all these problems, but we're often not taught to connect the dots. And when we are taught to connect the dots, it's often pattern rather than divergent thinking. Mm-hmm. And so I think having a broad perspective, being able to, what I call, zoom in and zoom out to varying degrees, and to be able to monitor that, is something we're simply not taught. And we see this in our research with government leaders. We certainly see it in terms of congressional hearings. We see it in terms of international agencies. We see it in terms of business, that people simply don't push the pause button, step back, and say, what is my real strategic intent here? Another thing that I think gets in the way just terribly, mm-hmm, is that we are rewarded for strategic planning. We're rewarded for results. And often, I think, thinking is not considered to be, is not considered to have very much relevance within our modern day workplace. And I just think, I just think it's tragic. I think that gets started, unfortunately, within our formal education setting at a very early age, where the focus is on quick solutions right now.
Now, how much of this, though, is the drastic amount of interruptions? In other words, we're now pulled in, you know, in 50 different directions. And, you know, if we get up and turn on our phone, or we turn on the computer, or we turn on something, and we have portions of media through sound bites that are trying to instantly get our attention. So how much of that is really keeping us from following through with strategic thinking and or planning?
I think it's having a huge impact. I think it's having a huge impact on the type of thinking that we have learned as adults, and certainly are learning today as well. This constant interruption and the pressure to come up with an instant solution is really a detraction and a distraction from being able to identify what is the real problem and the right problem. And this is something that I go back to all the time in terms of working with whomever I'm working with, is that the purpose, the very purpose of strategic thinking is to focus on the problem, not the solution. Whereas the real focus of strategic planning is to focus on the solution. And a lot of times we get those two mixed up. And so I think this comes to being able to slow down and to ask ourselves the question, what is my strategic intent? You know, because I think strategic thinking, people have to be very deliberate about saying the focus here is not on solutions. So, you know, I would say zap it when a solution comes up. But the focus is really on the problem, which I love what you said in the beginning about, you know, being an investigator. If you're so in a hurry to get to a solution, but yet you're reaching the a solution as quickly as possible, but it's to the wrong problem, it's useless. But this happens all the time in business, and it happens all the time in government. We're just in such a great rush, you know, to come up with any solution, and to be the first to come up with a solution is often rewarded. And these very rare people who actually can push the pause button and say, wait a minute, and ask a whole series of deep dive questions that can uncover a problem at its core are really rare gems.
Now, I know that one of the things that that we do, and again, this is as investigators, and this is something that Malcolm Gladwell talks about, which is if we're trying to think about a particular strategy on how we're going to, let's say, work a case, we will go to a pool table, and we will sit there and start playing pool so that half of our brain is focusing on what it is that we're doing, and all of a sudden in the middle of a shot we'll stop and go, okay, what about this? And we will now start strategically thinking about it. But it's almost as if we had to divert that other part of our brain so that we could focus. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It makes perfect sense. And I talk about exactly the same thing, just exactly the same thing. I use a little bit different wording. But some of the things that have come up from my research, you know, one of the things that I think was perhaps most surprising to me was the way that people tend to use what I call their irrational mind rather than their rational mind. And this is exactly that, where strategic thinking itself, the learning aspect of it, doesn't tend to happen in a formal work environment. It certainly doesn't tend to happen in strategy sessions, but rather it tends to happen when people are out. They're running, they're swimming, they're doing gardening, painting, playing piano, cooking, and also through the creation of metaphor. And the research that I've just finished, and I'm actually working on another book, is taking a look at the use of metaphor and drawing as it relates to learning strategic thinking. Because this is exactly what happens. People will use their irrational mind, which is very heavily based in intuition, in divergent thinking, in nonlinear thinking, critically reflective thinking, those symbolic thinking, those sorts of things. And So the irrational mind is searching for the broad perspective of a conceptual problem, while the rational mind is trying to put it into a linear order. And that's exactly happens when you're talking about, you know, people are out playing pool or they're gardening or they're doing whatever. It's this back and forth, very iterative nature that allows you to think at a very, very, very deep level that's often not consciously aware.
Well, and I know that as you were saying that, I was sort of visualizing, you know, what's going on out there right now in the sense of our media and the concept of, you know, it's a quick soundbite of this, and so you're thinking of, and you start thinking about that, and then they hit you with something else, or, you know, then there's a third thing and a fourth thing. How can we kind of narrow our thinking process down or stay focused on what we should be focused on? Because I feel like, you know, we're pulled in so many ways, and it's in a negative thing. It also
results in very shallow thinking. Mm-hmm. When we're bombarded with so much information so quickly, and then are forced to move right into convergent thinking in terms of, so draw a conclusion. Mm-hmm. So give me a result, give me an answer, give me a solution. That tends to be based on very shallow thinking, because we're forced to go from a tiny bit of information right into reductionist and convergent thinking. And we tend to operate that way, you know, for 8 hours a day, sometimes even more than that. And it's why I think it's very, very important for leaders to say, you know, how important is this problem? And do we really know that we have a strategic issue here? And if so, that you have to deliberately and consciously choose to move into strategic thinking, which means people are going to have to push the pause button and start using some types of thinking that we're very unaccustomed to, that are quite unfamiliar to most of us.
Yeah, and I think that makes perfect sense, because now there's this push to single story thinking. You know, you've been given a single story. We're not going to give you time to rationally think about this or to take in any other information, but you're instantly forced into a reaction.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think further is people then think that a reaction is a conclusion.
Yeah.
Or that it's a solution. And then we tend to act on that solution. And again, most of the time when we use that thought process, there's no depth of thought. And something that really concerns me there is that this whole notion of efficiency of thought, just mm-hmm. quick, yep. efficiency of thought has really replaced depth of thought in terms of value. And I think you see the consequences of this all over. It's why we, you know, part of this results in making the same mistake over and over and over and over and over, simply because we haven't taken the time to identify the real problem. And most of us really lack the experience of what it's like to push the pause button and really stay with the tension, the tremendous tension that comes from real strategic problems. We just don't have that experience because we're not allowed to.
You know, I was talking with a college student earlier in the week because I talk a lot about who my next guest is and what the subject matter is going to be. And they mentioned something, and I'm quite a few years beyond college, but they mentioned something that was interesting, to where they said that they feel a bullying effect of being forced into taking a being presented something, and sort of a bullying effect of, and if you don't agree with me immediately, I don't like you, or I'm against you. And they said that they just had this feeling of feeling really uncomfortable about the fact of feeling bullied into not thinking. It's like, no, don't take time to think. I need an answer now.
Oh, I love the way you describe this. You know, this is interesting, because I get the same reaction in university classes at the graduate level, you know, master's level and PhD level all the time. People will come in, and I really make a you know, big deal in terms of hammering away in the beginning, setting the stage, saying, you know, this, you know, there will be a certain amount of tension that will be deliberately created because we're going to be using some thinking methodologies that are very unfamiliar, and everybody's yeah. Until we actually start to move into that, where, you know, they really do push the pause button. People, the words people use to describe that are just, sometimes they're just really, they get very emotional. And they find it to be very, very liberating, because for many people, and it's the first time that they have really been allowed to have the time to stay with the tension of a really complex issue and a real conceptual issue, to just stay with it, you know, for days, and where the whole purpose and the whole intention is not resolution, it's not to converge on any kind of a solution. And I find that reaction so surprising, and I find it very gratifying. But it just tells me over and over and over everywhere in the world that that people are sort of, I don't want to say crying out, but are really reaching out for this experience of, I think, a deeper permission to have a deeper level of thought.
Yes, and I love the fact that there's this great movement of mindfulness where I think we do have a lot of people that are focusing on that and saying, you know, I understand what you're saying. I'm choosing to mindfully think this through and strategically think about how I feel about it, and I'm not going to be bullied or pushed into immediately responding or being reactionary to it.
I think the whole mindfulness, the whole interest and surge of interest in mindfulness is another manifestation of people really kind of reaching out to say, you know, I've got so much food in my mouth, I can't digest any of it right now. And yet you're just coming at me with more. And I find the theme, you know, I think mindfulness has a very, very positive feeder influence on strategic thinking.
Yeah.
That you've got to find the pause button. And first of all, you've got to know there is one, and that you can control it. And that, you know, otherwise we just keep getting bombarded with these waves, just these massive waves of new information, shock information, and we're forced to come, and we're rewarded with coming up with conclusions and solutions very, very quickly. And it's just not humanly possible to do that. I think sometimes this another critical piece of strategic thinking is this ability to engage in critical dialogue and critical reflection and critical inquiry. You can't rush that, and you can't force that.
Well, yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, we have an email question that is coming in that sort of touches right on the subject that we're on right now, and this one reads, "It seems we have become a nation of the blind leading the blind. It is truly..."
Bingo.
Yeah, it says, "It is truly a lack of strategic thinking, and more so individuals who are so concerned about their own personal interest that they override common sense. If we have another economic dive as we did about 10 years ago, I believe we will be in very deep trouble in the U.S. and worldwide. I am curious how we not only identify strategic thinkers, but how can we empower them to get past a broken system to implement change before it's too late?" And this is from Adrian in Connecticut. Thank you, Adrian, for your question.
Yeah, what a wonderful, wonderful question, and I appreciate that. I think a couple of things. I guess I feel so strongly about the need for strategic thinkers as well. I think really leaders at all levels, and I do mean all levels, starting with leaders of organizations in high school, university level, right up through government organizations, international agencies. People do need to know the difference between strategic thinking and strategic planning. I think if we don't know the difference, we can't make a deliberate choice. And I think by I don't want to say demanding, but by certainly requesting that leaders clarify when you go into a strategy meeting, is the focus of this meeting on strategic thinking, meaning do we need to really spend some time grapple with the problem and say, is this the real problem and the right problem? Or do we have that in, and are we in agreement that we've got the right problem identified and now what we want to do is move into solutions, which is the strategic, traditional, conventional planning piece? Or are we ready to move into implementation? I think people need to start asking that question. And I think we need to start asking that of Congress here within the U.S. during congressional hearings, you know, of boards. You know, the role of boards is largely strategic thinking, but a lot of what boards actually do is focus on implementation and in the absence of strategic thinking. So I think people have to know what the difference is and then really sort of take the courage and dare each other to clarify that, because otherwise we're just running in circles and we're chasing our tail. I get very concerned in terms of what I think is an absence of strategic thinking when it comes to national security issues, when it comes to economic issues globally, as well as nationally. So I just think it starts with this, you know, definition and clarity of terminology. And I thank you so much for that question.
Yeah. And again, I thank everybody that takes the time. I know that for some people, we have a lot of teachers that are, for instance, listeners. So we get a lot of questions that are sent in the night before because they can't listen. They're with their class right now, and then they're going to listen later on iTunes or whatever they use to listen. So, yes, I'm
honest. Oh, they're teachers. My hat's off to teachers. I think if you're a teacher and are interested in strategic thinking, that is just where it's at in terms of teaching things that move, you know, teaching thinking processes that move beyond linear thinking, analytical thinking, rational thinking, and really allowing students at all levels from, you know, kindergarten right up through to really focus on the critical reflective processes, to spend the time of doing, you know, what some people refer to as open-ended thinking, of thinking for the thinking for the sake of developing cognitive processes that are at a much more advanced level, doing, you know, engaging students in really critical dialogue with no expectation of a vote or an agreement or a singular right answer, getting students to be comfortable with the tension that comes from possibility of multiple right answers or no right answer. Living with that tension, I think, is an important life skill, and it certainly is necessary for strategic thinking. Also, anything that teachers can do to support divergent thinking, which has a strong element of creativity in it. I think one of the things that has been very surprising to me in terms of my research is this strong element of support for strategic thinking that comes from engagement in the arts and the humanities. I cannot think of a better source for developing strategic thinking attributes than to just simply engage people in experiences with the arts and with the humanities, because it teaches, you know, meta thinking, macro thinking, and micro thinking. It teaches the deep dive questioning. It allows people to stay with thoughts that can really create discomfort. That's just absolutely critical for generating critical dialogue and critical inquiry.
And growth. I mean, that's what we need for growth. I recently learned about a principal at a high school in Northern California. It's a Hillsborough High School, and they have set up now to where each graduating class does a court hearing based on the meaning of life, and everybody involved plays a role, and they go to a superior courtroom, and they set it up, and they present their their reasons for or against or whatever, but and they bring in like a whole bunch of the kids all come in as witnesses to provide information. They get to think through what their thoughts are. And I love the fact that they're doing this. I mean, I love the fact that they are getting so many of the kids to get involved and to think about the meaning of life. And not necessarily saying that, you know, that you individually with whatever your testimony is right or wrong, but showing how you can take all of these divergent thoughts and put them together collectively to then look at it and see what decision you come to. So I just, and I love that. And I think if we could get more at the, and this is at the high school level. So anyway, I was very impressed with that. So.
Oh, I think anything that teachers can do to support the cognitive cluster that really develops these sorts of thinking capabilities is it's tremendous for developing what we need for strategic thinkers. Right. You know, another thing you just triggered a thought in my mind, and I can barely hear you, oh, Alan, here. Well. But another thing that you have triggered my mind is that interestingly with strategic thinking, many times in formal settings, in corporations, in government organizations or whatever, real strategic thinkers are not included in strategy sessions. And a lot of that is because they are so highly divergent and they are asking those really tough deep dive questions that can really turn around, I mean just completely turn around a meeting and can make people feel completely off kilter. But what's interesting is I find many times when I'm doing speeches or when I'm doing seminars or when I'm addressing audiences, many times people who are on the low to moderate spectrum of autism or who have dyslexia will come up and they will say, Julia, you're talking to me. This is the first time I've had a name for something that I feel like I can contribute to in terms of business. And I just find it's fascinating that so many of the attributes and elements of strategic thinking really play into the strengths of the low to moderate autism spectrum and to dyslexia in terms of that real strong visual and spatial component. And I just think it's important to be really inclusive in terms of who gets invited to participate in strategy sessions. But I think sometimes some of our very best strategic thinkers, real strategic thinkers, people don't even think to invite into strategy sessions. And that's just a mismanagement of talent when we exclude people who do have what seems to be almost natural strength in those areas.
And you know, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that I also do being here in Hollywood is I have scripts that I have written based a lot on my prior exploits or cases. And there is a person who I send the scripts to read, who is extremely high functioning on the autism spectrum, and I value his input probably as much or more than anybody else because he is able to focus on things that I don't think other people pick up, and you add that to,
absolutely,
yeah, and you add it to the fact that he doesn't have a filter in regards to how he thinks my feelings are in regards to it one way or the other. So
yep.
and
oh, it's tremendously valuable.
Yeah.
Tremendously valuable in terms of pattern recognition.
Yep.
Things that may be completely invisible or oblivious to me, because I don't have those strengths. You know, and these are things that can ultimately doom a business or doom a policy. And I just think, gosh, there's so many people who have these strengths and these strategic gifts that I think are often excluded from strategy meetings that You show them data, you show them reports, you talk, and they're just like zip, 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 zip in terms of being able to pull together a pattern that probably, certainly, I would never be able, you know, in 20 years to be able to even find and to be able to recreate that pattern. That has been so fascinating to me. And I, like I said, I think it's a very overlooked talent, certainly in most corporate pipelines.
We are talking to Dr. Julia Sloan. The subject is strategic thinking. Stay with us. Oh, and if you want to follow Dr. Sloan, you can go to her website. You can open up another window on your computer and go to SloanInternationalConsulting.com. You can follow along, but make sure that you stay with us because we will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585. Or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. And the topic is the definitive book, Learning to Think Strategically. Our guest, Dr. Julia Sloan. Now, Julia, when you were putting this together, was there anything that was especially surprising to you as you're putting this book together? What surprised you the most?
I think probably the biggest surprise for me, just bowled me over surprise, was the use of metaphor and drawing as a way of supporting conceptual and complex thinking. This was something that it was just so not part of the research methodology. It was so not part of the hypothesis. It was just so not part of the research. And the fact that the use of metaphor for strategic thinking and the use of drawing as a technique for learning and strengthening strategic thinking was just so pervasive and so pronounced was just really a huge surprise to me.
Now, give us one of the examples, one of the metaphors that came into the situation.
A metaphor, there were thousands of them, but a very common theme for metaphors for strategic problems was the use of nature, something in nature. People would often, we're talking, you know, strategic problems are very complex problems, and they're problems that center around a polarity, or how do we do A and how do we do B at the same time? So one of the very, very common problems, or metaphors rather for problems, was some sort of a depiction of something in nature. Storms, seasons, life cycles. There was a CEO from India that I'll never forget, was just completely into his metaphor, and he stood up at a conference and he described moving through an underground tunnel that was filled with water. And he just described it in such great detail, in such beautiful detail, that the audience was very, very moved. And they got it. I mean, they really got it.
Now, do you think a lot of that comes from the fact that we're quite a visual society, so that if you can present a metaphor that allows somebody to take the auditory information you're providing and put pictures to it, that it's going to help them to grasp it?
Yes, absolutely. This is something that I think comes from one of the elements of strategic thinking is that it does have a very visual element to it. Also, the fact that strategic thinkers are able to see their problem in panoramic view, so they're able to position themselves without really thinking. They're able to position themselves. They're able to position themselves, if you will, from the bird's eye view, you know, up on branches at various levels. And this is something that I always work with in terms of helping people learn how to think strategically, is to take on a visual mindset and say, you know, position yourself at this level of a branch. What does the problem look like? In order for the problem to look like something, they really begin to draw. Mm-hmm. And then position yourself up from another higher level branch and another higher level branch. Because what you're teaching people there is to zoom in and to zoom out. And what happens as people are beginning to zoom in and zoom out at various levels, if you will, of the mm-hmm. bird's eye view,
sure.
they're able to see the broad perspective. They begin then to pull in elements of economics, elements of religion, elements of socioeconomic issues, elements of political issues. Those are things, as their panorama expands, those are things that get pulled into the picture and into the conversation. And so it's using irrational thinking to a very, very high degree to deal with a complex problem. And people all over, I mean, it's a universal cognitive element that people have the need to grasp information, conceptual information, and complex information through pictures. It's why I always say it's why every single religion in the world across the ages has used parables mm-hmm. and fables to convey complex conceptual stories and lessons. And we need that today just as much as we've needed it, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years ago. Well, so it's a technique that can be very, very useful for teaching some very complex thinking capabilities.
Well, as someone who's worked with many young people who are either on their way to or from a specialized school for at-risk children, that's one of the things that's used in many of these programs, is that they'll take, like, culturally, some American Indian sayings. And then so they will not only talk about it, but then they will, have them picture it, or they'll have them draw it
mm-hmm.
so that they can take on some of these things. So, yeah, it's very similar, but it is allowing them to think internally in regards to it. And then once they take it in, they may have a different take on it, but they're
yes.
still thinking. It's still getting them to think instead of telling them how to think.
And it's something that is so interesting when they do use metaphor in the form of drawing and coming up with imagery, is the retention of a concept. You know, you're teaching conceptual mm-hmm. thinking, which is a very advanced level cognition, but you're teaching conceptual thinking when you're doing that. But also the memory retention for those concepts will stay with students for a lifetime, but they'll retell the story and they'll change aspects of the image. That's just invaluable. That's exactly what we want people to do with policy issues. It's exactly what we want people to do with the complex conceptual issues of a corporate strategy. And so some of these things, I think people, particularly in Western culture, tend to diminish the importance of, that are actually very advanced level cognitions. And certainly drawing and, the use of metaphor through fables and parables and so on are really teaching some very high level conceptual thinking skills.
And
it also allows people not only to increase their memory retention, but also to pay attention to details. They will remember details that would escape them in a fleeting moment if they hadn't drawn it or if they hadn't heard the visual story.
And while we're talking about culture, what's probably the biggest truth about the role of culture in strategic thinking?
Well, I think my research has encompassed a lot of cultures, more than 36 different cultures. And I think one of the things is that people often like to hide behind culture as a difference for teaching strategic thinking and for learning strategic thinking. But it's interesting because culture, while cultural influences tend to help us know what to pay attention to, and they help us know how to frame things and how to identify patterns, culture itself is only a veil that covers our ability to think. So I think it's important, I think it's really important to be able to transcend culture and to be able to refocus as quickly as possible on the learning process of strategic thinking and not get ourselves caught and locked in hiding behind culture to say, well, you know, why aren't there any strategic thinkers in Belgium, or why aren't there any strategic thinkers in India or China or the U.S. or whatever? Strategic thinkers are universal. They're all over the place. It's that we often don't know what we're looking for is the problem.
Now, I noticed in your book, and you refer to a rational rut. What is the rational rut that we've gotten ourselves into, and how do we get out of it?
I think we are really stuck in a rational rut, particularly here in the U.S. and in Western culture. We tend to really overvalue and over-rely on rational analytical thinking, and we tend to ignore the value that comes from irrational thinking. And I think irrational thinking is especially important for developing conceptual and complex cognition. So I just feel like it's not to undermine the importance of rational thinking. We need that. We need to continue to hone that and to polish it and to really stay on top of that. But that rational thinking alone is not enough for conceptual and complex problems. We need to tap in and not be afraid of irrational thinking.
Yeah, I think in a very minor example of that, I was having a conversation with someone who was saying that right now that the form of texting is destroying our language. It's destroying, and you know, they were really upset about the fact that, you know, that that's destroying it. And I said, well, you could also look at it as the fact that it is also it's created new words. It's created a form of thinking to where people are now trying to abbreviate things in such a way that is allowing them to get through it quicker. So there is a different shift of thinking that's going on, but I don't know that it's completely destroyed our our language. And they said, well, but that's not rational. You know, they just said to me, I wasn't being rational because I could look at the fact that there is some value to it. You know, so.
And, you know, I think, yeah, I'm not entirely opposed to that either. I mean, I don't think it matters if you're, you know, for it or against it, because it's happening. Yeah. I think what's important is that we take that and pull back, you know, rise above it and pull back and say, you know, what is something positive that we can possibly shape from this? And one thing is, I think there is an echo of what else that I'm hearing. People are very good at texting, but I think what people are wanting, I think people are just choking on speedy sorts of activities. And I think if we pull back and listen to that echo, people are also saying, can you just give me time to make some new meaning of this, or some meaning at all, or to challenge the meaning of something? And I think a great way to do that is to get people to draw, because a lot of times there are things that are happening inside of people's heads that they don't have words for, but that they can come up with images and pictures for. And I think where we see this is the use of imagery in terms of icons. Icons are just, they catch on like wildfire. I mean, people love icons. And that's a form of conceptualization. So I think there are things that we need to pull back and say, okay, what is happening? What are patterns of things that are happening? But how can we actually take that information and use it for something that's going to, you know, elevate the level of thinking, because I think people are crying out for that.
Well, Julia, I got to tell you, I wish we had another hour because I could go on. I mean, I think you...
I appreciate your questions so much. Oh. They're so interesting for me.
I mean, and again, so for everybody out there, I mean, you know, I highly recommend that you get the book, you know, and you can get it anywhere books are sold. Or again, you can go to the website, SloanInternationalConsulting.com. Julia, I just want to really acknowledge everything that you're doing. I think that you are touching on something that is so important for our country, important for our young people.
Thank you.
And you mentioned that you have a new book coming out. Please stay in touch. In fact, I'll touch bases with you after this because I'd love to know more about what's going on with the new book, and we would love to have you back.
Oh, thank you. A million thanks to you and also to your listeners. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, and actually, and I want to share that one of the things that I've been told and that I realize and I'm thankful for is that I think I have a lot of very, very intelligent listeners because we get so many great questions, and I just appreciate so much that they are critical thinkers. So,
yeah.
So again, for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're joined by Dr. John Souza and Mike Sullivan from Pacific Quest Academy to discuss wilderness therapy Hawaiian style. Be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polachek, only on LA Talk Radio.